Welcome back to Protagonists of Change. I'm Max Lindell, Campus Minister at the University of St. Thomas in Houston, Texas. Here today with Nicole Labadie, Director of Campus Ministry, and Darnell Miller, Catholic Outreach and Producer for Max Studios. We have a great show for you today. In part one, I will talk about my experience at the border and how, using the lens of Catholic social teaching, I engaged with those at the border. In part two, Nicole talks to one of our colleagues, Doris Barrow III, a campus minister at Texas Southern University, about Catholic social teaching and how it affects his life. In part three, Who's That Saint? We learn about the slave of the Negroes, St. Peter Claver, a man who dedicated his life to service of African slaves in the New World. And all this is happening right now, so stick around. When I first got to the University of St. Thomas, one of the things that I was asked to do by Nicole was to organize a group of students to go down to the border at Laredo, Texas, to help with the border crisis down in Texas. And that was something I was super excited about, especially coming from Cleveland, Ohio. I haven't been down to the border of Texas, and you hear so much about it, and it's always polarized and all these things. And we look at these issues, and it's easy to put numbers on the people coming over, or just saying that they shouldn't be here, or everyone should be welcome. But when you go down there and encounter the people in person, it really can change your life. And that's exactly what happened in my experience when I went down to the border with these students. So when we went down to the border, we were expecting to have like an overflow of people, but at that time there were some laws that were changing in the government, and the border process was going much slower. So we ended up being there with a group of about 10 people who stayed there for the whole time that we were there, which was a week. And that 10 people we grew to know really well. And what it did for me personally, it really took down that wall that you have of just like what you hear on the news and everything, because you start encountering these people, even if you don't speak the same language. That connection really kind of crossed all boundaries for us, and especially for me. But one of the things that really stuck out to me about this issue is how does our church, and how are we called to act, or how are we called to action on this issue? So our church has these seven Catholic social teachings, and we're called to use those to kind of engage with the world and look at the world in different ways. And one of the ones that really stuck out to me on this experience was this word solidarity. So the church calls us to be in solidarity with those that are marginalized and those that are experiencing great suffering. But what does that mean? I think a lot of times it's easy to say solidarity is, oh, I care, I put myself in the other person's shoes. But I think what it really means, and this is what I experienced when I was down at the border, is to walk with someone and accompany them, and not say, oh, things are gonna get better at the end of this, or I'm gonna take you here or do this for you. It means you walk with them in their sorrows and in their pains and their joys that they're experiencing in the moment, and you become truly in solidarity with them. Instead of trying to say like, oh, this is what the future will be, this is how it's gonna change whenever you stay here, or whatever happens. And I think when I was at the border, I was called into solidarity with this one kid named Miguel. And what we ended up making a great relationship. We played a lot of soccer together and everything. And at the end of it, he wanted to give me some money from Honduras. And he said, will you keep this to remember me? And even to this day, I still have that money in my wallet. And I shared that earlier on another podcast, but just that solidarity, in the sense it always brings us back that we're all one and we're all walking together in this world. And that solidarity really should move us and encourage us to work for action in the world. And I think that's one of the hardest things to do, but also it's one of the greatest joys whenever you're in solidarity with the world. And I think we're all kind of experiencing that now too, with everything that's gone on with COVID. We're all in the same experience, and not often do we have that happen in the world, but how can we take that and look at our faith and say, this is in a way that we can be closer together and connect as one community again. And I think that's really what that experience happened for me. And because I didn't do anything, I was just there present and hung out most of the time, but it was great to just be with people in that were coming over and looking for something, looking that America had to offer for them. Part two, Doris Barrow III is a campus minister at Texas Southern University and a director of religious education at St. Monica. He sits down to talk to Nicole about his discovery of Catholic social teaching and the impact it has on his life and ministry.
So today we have with us Doris Barrow. from Texas Southern University. Doris, can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Yes, absolutely. So I am a campus minister and director of the Newman Center at Texas Southern University. As a matter of fact, the beginning of July marked the beginning of my third year in this ministry. Yeah, third year. Time has flown by. And but in addition to that, I also wear a second hat as a coordinator of religious education at my parish. So I am basically one of my first ministries was that of a catechist. I've been a catechist for some 15 years and leading and accompanying other catechists for the better part of 12 years.
Oh, so wonderful.
Yeah, so I wear those hats, two hats as a catechist and a campus minister.
That's awesome. Thanks so much. So yeah, let's dive right into our topic for today, which is Catholic social teaching. So I guess first question, how did you first learn about Catholic social teaching? How were you exposed to it? When did you first encounter that?
I remember it takes me back to my childhood. And, you know, every time I think about it, I was just so blessed to have a parish family and a church that was so nurturing. And one of the first experiences was, I remember being an altar server, and one of the things we would do is we would prepare in the sacristy, which was in the back or the all front altar of the church, and then we would walk outside, come all the way to the front of the church to process in. Well, as soon as you came in through the first set of doors, I guess that's the narthex, there was this sign that said, if you want to work for peace, you must work for justice. I may have the quote. Except, and I remember inquiring about what that meant and who said it. And it was, in one way, my introduction to Catholic social teaching that, you know, the calling by God for us, you know, to be the emissaries of, you know, of justice and of his justice for our fellow brothers and sisters. So for me, that's where it began. And, you know, my childhood pastor would always encourage us to, you know, to keep those things, you know, top of mind, being faithful Catholics, being faithful to the sacraments. And there was always a message of Catholic social teaching in his homily. Mm-hmm. And fast forward years later, it wasn't until, you know, I was an undergraduate in college, he was retired, and we would talk about those things. And he would remind me, said, you know, this is one of the reasons why, you know, I spoke about Catholic social teaching because of how, you know, important it was. And so fast forward, not realizing that it would become instrumental as part of my ministry. Which would eventually tie to some aspects of social justice. And, you know, I guess they say hindsight is 20/20, that I would sort of follow this thread of where I am now, and eventually it would take me back, you know, to that moment. We have, I think all of us, if we sit down and reflect, we can sort of follow that thread to certain moments where, you know, the seed was planted. And it gives us, and I would say it gives me an opportunity now to, you know, to truly live that out as a campus minister and coordinator of religious education.
Thanks so much. I love that that quote was introduced to you very early on in your life as a disciple, that yes. Paul the Sixth, if you want peace, work for justice.
That's it, Paul the Sixth. Yep.
Yeah, I love, that's one of my favorite quotes. I didn't learn or read that until probably college, but that's amazing that it was so much a part of your experience of the church and like your experience of worship. So we hear Catholic social teaching a lot. We see the capital CST abbreviated in a lot of places. What is Catholic social teaching, and why does the church have something to say about the social order and about about working for justice?
It's, you know, I kind of attribute it to, for whatever reason, within the last 6 months, I've become very focused on the creation stories and how just from the very beginning, God taking, and for us, taking time to bring creation into existence. Mm-hmm. And then the calling for us to be stewards of creation, those things which are, you know, created outside of humanity, but even being stewards of humanity itself. And so that's been a calling from God from the very beginning. And being a student of history, sort of following salvation history, if you will, you can see these moments of God sort of as a reminder that we are truly stewards of creation. We're stewards even of each other. And with those things are tied in, and to me, it makes sense that, you know, the themes of Catholic social teaching are inextricably tied, you know, tied to creation. You know, from the very beginning, talking about, you know, there's the creation of the family. You see even elements of work, right? That there is mm-hmm. dignity in, you know, in our labor. The importance of recognizing the dignity of, you know, of other human beings. And fast forward, we have to the person of Jesus. I think what we see is the, the culmination and expression of these social teachings that far back. So just recently, yesterday, some of my parish family, we get together for Alessio Divina. We always reflect on the script, the gospel reading from the previous Sunday. And it just so happened to have it. And we were looking at the gospel of Matthew, and we see Jesus feeding the 5,000. And we see even there, you know, Jesus being concerned about the needs of a community of people. Of course, the message has more meaning than just the feeding and the nurturing of people physically, although that is very, very important. But in addition to that, it being able to point toward, spiritual nourishment, which I think for Catholic social teaching, you know, both of those things are necessary to nurture that person's very existence that we can see, that's living and breathing. But in addition to that, the calling to nurture, the spirit of an individual. So I don't know if I said more than we like, but for me, that's the Catholic social teaching fits between those two pillars of nurturing the individual physically, but also, spiritually. You need to be mindful of that.
Yeah, that speaks to, like the spiritual works of mercy, but also the corporal works of mercy.
Corporal works, yeah.
A person's spiritual life, their life with God, but then also their life as an embodied person in all of the things that you named. And I love that you pointed us to the creation story where like human beings are given a dignity because they're made in the image and likeness of God. And they're given this call to relationship, to family, to community, because God is relationship and community. And they're given this dignity to their work as co-creators with God. I love, thank you for pointing us there. I think that's so essential. So I want to talk a little bit about the distinction between charity and justice. So there's this classic story that you've probably heard before a lot. I've been told it a lot too in any sort of class that touches on Catholic social teaching of, you know, there's a river and you see a child drowning in the river. And so you go and like you pick the child up. You care for him or her, you know, give them some dry clothes, give them some food, make sure that they're breathing. And then, you know, maybe the next day or the day after, there's another kid floats down the river drowning in need of help, so you pull that child out, care for them too. And when the third child comes down, like, you begin to ask yourself, okay, what might be causing this issue of children drowning in the river? So if you go upriver, you see, okay, a bridge has broken. We also need to fix that bridge in order to address the problem, while also not abandoning, obviously, the children who are drowning in our midst. But at the same time, it's not as fruitful if we just continue caring for those children coming down the river without addressing the root problem. So I wanted to ask you, why are both charity and justice necessary in, like, the lens of church teaching and Catholic social teaching? And how might an individual, say, a first-year college student, like, how might one individual work for both of those?
And that's a great question. I remember, and I like to tie things to personal experiences, and I remember, and it's a commercial, I haven't seen it in quite a while, but see people kind of going about their day, just doing normal stuff, and they witness someone doing something, you say kind, for another person. But going, and you see it sort of affecting other people. Someone sees helping an elderly woman across the street, and then they're inspired to, you know, help someone put some groceries in a car, and then someone sees that and they're inspired to, to do something else. But taking it a bit beyond that, not just for the sake of the act, it's, the reason why. One of the first times I had charity explained to me as a form of love, it helped me to put it in more perspective. This understanding that you say charity begins at home, it begins in the heart. It's this virtue that flows from, in my reflection, the commandments of God. Like, why should I be charitable toward my brother and sister? And at the same time, being willing to receive charity from another person. But looking beyond what is sort of garden variety charity, receiving a thing from another person, or giving a thing to another person, but flowing from a love of God and a love of neighbor, to me, those two things should be, and for me, are the guiding, the guiding commandments for how I should do something. Charity in the form of what I say to another human being. I remember doing a Lenten reflection on, and I'm looking at it now, on the letter of James. James, that letter may not necessarily just explicitly discuss charity. One of the things that it focuses on is, heroic holiness in speech. So just beginning there, what we say to another person, is our language, is my language charitable to another human being? Am I conscious of that? Is it flowing from a position that I love God and I love my neighbor who's in front of me? And to me, the launch to, before you get to justice, to me, it begins there. Because I sort of experience justice as the culmination of charity truly lived out. And if for me, any of those aspects of charity are removed, right? If I am spending time on my knees and fervent prayer to the triune God, but at the same time ignore my neighbor who is in front of me, then I am missing the fullness of the full expression of that charity. Because when I get to justice, it should be reflective of God's justice experienced by humanity, and we should be, you know, conduits of that. But in addition to that, to be the justice that our fellow brothers and sisters need to see and to hear across a variety of, you know, of spectrums. So, Nicole, I may have gotten too theologically in the week, but for me, that to me, charity flows from those two commandments. I can't see it coming from any other place. And from there, it points us, it points me toward justice. And then in some kind of way, God's justice, you know, for others. So, and then when we get into the social teachings, we're talking about concern for creation, the dignity of a worker, the dignity of the human being. That should flow from a love of God and a love of neighbor, which to me, that's, you know, that, you know, that theological virtue, you talk about love, to me, that is the epitome of what charity should be, pointing toward justice.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I love the connection that you make between that experience of prayer and worship of God and that love of God flowing out into love of neighbor. I've always been so struck by like the words at the end of Mass when we're all sent to love and serve God and one another, to go and be and make of our lives a Eucharist and offering to God. And those, like, yeah, those are so synonymous. And in part, like, Jesus, like, identifies, God is identified as someone who is poor or on the margins or someone who's oppressed. Like, Jesus identifies himself with the hungry, with the thirsty, with those who are in need of physical healing. Or material charity. So I want to ask a little bit more. What is, like, how does the church understand justice? Going back to that original, like, Pope Paul VI quote, you want peace, work for justice. What's at the heart of that distinction between charity and justice?
Oh, wow, that's a, that's a great question. You know, I have spent some time a bit more, you know, Easter or the Lenten season gives me an opportunity to really reflect on Jesus's passion, ultimately leading to his death and resurrection. And for me, the last couple of months have given me an opportunity to reflect on that a bit more. And to really focus in on, you know, that outpouring of love by Jesus in his death. So starting there, one of the most amazing kind of things that I'm thinking about this understanding of justice as part of God's plan is to relationship with humanity and humanity having a relationship with God. And to me, one of the most justful and beautiful things is an opportunity for us to have access to salvation through the person of Jesus. To me, that's one of the, if not the preeminent example of that for us to be reminded of, but also in a way being called to, you know, share elements of justice with our brothers and sisters, because I kind of think, you know, how much of that was a gift, a gift to us. And to me, it flows from that. You know, we spend a liturgical year, you know, reflecting on the beauty of everything from Pentecost through ordinary time, and then coming around and getting ready before we know it, we'll be at Feast of Christ the King, into Advent, into Lent again. And that entire experience should be directing us, well, it directs me to focusing on God's justice in ensuring that, you know, we truly experience it. But then in the same breath, I would also lean on the book of Job, which is an interesting way of trying to wrap my head around justice in that experience. And sometimes, you know, it can be difficult to fathom. You know, God's ways are not our ways, His thoughts are not our thoughts. So in my finite human understanding, I try to understand a bit more about God's justice through Job's story. But what we see is that, God's justice in a way is, in some ways I understand it, but in some ways I don't. And that is one of the mysteries. You know, God is just as he sees fit. I may not understand it totally, but I trust that that according to his will, that justice will, you know, will truly be lived out. And then at the end of Job, we see the experience of, you know, this transformation. We see what happens. But I think kind of along the journey of justice, sometimes it can seem a bit unfair. It doesn't flow the way that I like. I wish it were a little bit different, but it's God's justice. You know, it happens in his in the way he sees fit. And I kind of think about, you know, this, so you're thinking about the church, right? I always liken things to being a good steward. So as much as I have an expectation to experience God's justice, you know, I am also partially called to share justice with others. To me, it comes, you know, by virtue of my baptism. So as a disciple, right? How do I share the justice of God with others? And what does that look like? And I think individually, we have, you know, these specific callings to justice that prayerfully we can respond to. And then I think that there's this collective justice, this communal justice that we do as a church that we're also called to do as well.
Thank you. And I love that you pointed us to the book of Job and that experience of innocent suffering and the questioning of, like, where is God in that? But we trust, that God is just. And that God is still good in the midst of that. And I think that we can, I don't know, I find myself looking to the book of Job in that, the wondering of where God is when I encounter issues of social justice or encounters of social injustice now. So I wanted to ask, do you have any personal lived experiences of social injustice or like working for that more just society that you'd like to share with students and young people?
Yes, there is, let me think of something more recent. So even as a college student, I remember I can't think about my alma mater, so Grambling State University. It's just geographically how it's situated. So Grambling State University is in this tiny town, Grambling, Louisiana. And it is literally 5 miles away from another university, Louisiana Tech University. And I remember there was this understanding of tension that existed. This is in North Louisiana, and it was almost as if, you attend Grambling State University, so infrequently, and unless it's absolutely necessary, don't spend time in Ruston, Louisiana, which is where Louisiana Tech was located. Mm-hmm. To me, that was kind of, I didn't immediately get that, other than, maybe because, since Grambling, the town and the university, is home, stay there, everything that you need should be there. But in some cases, that wasn't the case, because that little town didn't have the grocery store, it didn't have a drugstore, it didn't have some basic things that a city would need. And so students would need to travel to the next city over. I came to understand a bit more about that tension and interaction with students from both universities and even both communities as well. I had elders who were retired professors at the university, some business owners, and they would share stories about experiences of them when they were my age, and the caution of traveling at night to this town, the fear of life and limb, being concerned about traveling to this to this small town. So one semester, it was at the end of my sophomore year, and one of the things we would do is you pack everything up. It was at the end of the spring. You pack everything up, and I had a job waiting for me for the summer back home. It's a 3-hour trek to my hometown. And I loaded everything in my truck, and I took the trek from North Louisiana down to South Louisiana. And, in addition was the caution of, okay, be careful on this route. It's not interstate. It's highway. It's back roads and everything. And so when you start to come to a town, remember, you need to lower your speed limit down to 25 miles per hour. It may say 35, drop it to 25. Be careful. And I was always encouraged to leave at a certain time. So this is, oh gosh, I can't believe cell phones were not that popular in the 90s. There was no communication. It was like I called home and said, I'm leaving. I'll be there in 3 hours. Time at, I don't know, the delay. I ended up leaving in the evening time, which was discouraged. And I remember an experience of driving home in this little town that I was always cautious about. And I thought I decreased my speed limit. And there was a police officer, and he stopped me. He pulled up behind my truck. There was this, and this was on the edge of this little town, so it was pitch dark, pitch black dark, with the exception of the lights of my truck and his patrol car. And I had an open bed in the truck, so you could kind of see things sort of peeking out. So I thought, well, maybe he stopped me because maybe things aren't tied down or it's not secure. Well, the window down, so I remember the first thing you ask, good evening, officer, why am I being stopped? And you say, shut up. Let me see your driver's license and insurance, and made sure I handed that to him. He went to the back of the truck, and there was another vehicle that pulled up as well that wasn't a patrol car. It was just a regular, it was a civilian truck. And it pulled up behind him, and I saw them talking, and he asked me to get out. So I did get out. And it's at the back of my truck, and I asked, why was I being stopped? And, the officer persisted and said, shut up. And as a matter of fact, put your hands on my patrol car. And I was, and at that point, I began to worry, and I was scared. And I said, I don't know what this is about. So they proceeded, both of them, the uniformed officer and someone else, and proceeded to get in my truck and kind of go through things. And I remember saying this and thinking immediately as I was saying it, I shouldn't have. And I said, what are you looking for? You're not going to find anything there. Mm-hmm. And that's when they both turned around and walked toward me. They didn't say anything, but as they were doing that, I started to, in my mind, kind of pray. It's like, Lord, I'm sorry. I did not mean to say anything. I will shut up. I will keep quiet. And they turned back around and walked to my truck and looked again. They talked to each other. Officer came back, handed me my driver's license and insurance and said, all right, get out of here. Now, that experience was very, you know, the unknown and being scared. And the only thing that I could do was to lean on an element of faith, you know, and pray and wonder, God, what was that experience about? It wasn't until many years later that I even remember. Nicole, I didn't tell anyone about this. I didn't tell my parents. I didn't tell friends. I didn't tell anyone. It wasn't until maybe a couple of years ago, I may have mentioned it to some friends I went to school with. I said, by the way, did y'all know this happened to me? And I think I mentioned it recently on a call with some fellow youth ministers in Galveston, Houston. Some may say, well, you know, that was the grace of God that you were able to get out of that experience. I remember with the spiritual director recounting that and saying, okay, and she asked, she said, well, where was God in that? I said, oh, well, I was going to immediately say, well, God wasn't there. He wasn't there when I needed him. And then I said, no, God was there. You know, God was there because I believe, you know, part of my prayer, my conversation with him helped me to kind of get through, you know, get through that experience. But it also provided me with a way to use that story to, you know, share with others so that, you know, those encounters, whether it's someone who's considering law enforcement as a career, they consider in their duty to consider interaction with people, especially persons of color, maybe as a conversion of heart, even for those who may find themselves in those situations, to stand, to remember that God is with you in that experience. And in some cases, it's tough to, it may be tough to accept because maybe the outcome may not be, you know, what you would like. But being mindful that God, you know, is with you. And for me, that's what that experience taught me. And it helped me to deepen my relationship with God. But then again, it was also a call to action that, you know, beyond just kind of going to college for, you know, undergraduate degree in history, you're called to something bigger. There's an experience of justice that you need to be a steward of. And, you know, sharing that as often as you can. But that was one experience that I kind of remember.
Thank you. Thank you so much for sharing that. Yeah, I'm really sorry that that happened. And I'm grateful for, you just walking us through that experience, but then also like the spiritual reflection that came later for you. And I think it points to the importance of like the realm of action, like you said, for not just those who experience injustice, but for those in more privileged social locations to work for systemic change. And yeah, I just thank you for sharing that. Do you have any words of encouragement for young people? A lot of times, like when we encounter those big social issues in society, be it racism or food insecurity, hunger, poverty, all of those issues of social injustice, it can feel overwhelming to say, okay, who am I to like do anything about this? How do you not get overwhelmed? And like, I guess what continues to bring you hope in working for justice and working for peace and working for the common good?
You know, there's, I like to think that, you know, we begin where we are So in our individual walks as disciples of Jesus, it begins with that conversation with God. We use the word discernment in regards to vocations and in ministry and callings in life. And I think the element of discernment is also necessary with elements of social justice. So I recorded a video for the U of H Vacation Bible School gathering, and I looked at the person of Simon of Cyrene. So, you know, it's amazing. Going back to my childhood, I could find these things and these experiences that helped me understand some things a bit better now that I'm really old. And I remember the stations of the cross as a kid and as an altar server and going from station to station. And, you know, in some cases they just kind of, they became, okay, well, I know the 14, you know, go here, go there. And I remember the one in particular from Simon of Cyrene being pressed into service. Mm-hmm. Simon minding his own business. He presumed that he may have been aware of what was going on. The area where he was, you know, yeah, it was the path to Golgotha. So just having upon this caravan of people going with these Roman soldiers to Golgotha with these criminals that were to be crucified. And against his will, they say being pressed into service and conscripted by the guards to carry the cross of Jesus. It's interesting of how, you know, there's in the Gospel of Mark, chapter 15, verse 21, where it mentions Simon of Cyrene as the individual. It mentions that he is a father, and it mentions his children. So it mentions him as leader of his family participating in the salvation, one of the most important salvation events of Christendom, in him being made to do it. Well, in another gospel passage that recounts that, it says Simon was made to carry the cross behind Jesus. And so I think it begins with understanding certain experiences, and you may be thrust into something. You may not understand it completely. And it may even seem as if you're being pushed to or nudged to participate in something. So when we think about the social justice and the end of racism, for some it may be, well, I don't know, you know, where to begin. I mean, or it doesn't really affect me. Well, think about the story of Simon of Cyrene being pressed into service by Jesus. In a way, it didn't have anything to do with Simon, but in a way it also did. So if we look at the cross that Jesus is carrying, and some will equate it to the sins of the world. So mine, if we equate the cross to represent, that's one of the things it represents. Being a participant in that eradication of racism and sin, which is a calling of the USCCB through the pastoral letter, Open Wide Our Hearts. You know, it's one of the first times that we can hear that, you know, we can participate, well, in one, seeking forgiveness for our sins, avoiding an occasion of, but the fact that we can also assist others in the avoiding the near occasion of sin, but also to help you know, eliminate its presence in our society. And that may mean walking with someone who is carrying a burden that is a cross, which may be the experiences of racism. It may not be something directly I may have done or you may have done, but it is still a calling of accompaniment. It's a beautiful word that for the last 3 years when I began campus ministry has come to the forefront of my mind, accompaniment, right? We're called to accompaniment as disciples. And, you know, so for me, the story of Simon is, a reminder that we are, in some cases, called to participate in that journey with our brothers and sisters. But the beauty of that is that Jesus is there as well. And we're called to follow him. Because I think it's a few verses back where it says, unless you deny yourself, pick up your cross and follow me. Jesus says this. And then fast forward, there is this experience of Simon following Jesus. And so, Nicole, I see it as the fullness of following Jesus in everything that we do is Catholics, our prayer life, living a sacramental life, being domestic church, living out the two great commandments, love of God, love of neighbor. To me, the fullness of that helps us to work toward ending the sin of racism or combating the sin of racism, you know, within our within our world. And to me, that's the hope that I have that, you know, from that position and taking on the attributes of Simon and following Jesus with the cross,
that we can
do that.
That's incredible. I've not ever heard that connection made. And I think it's, that's really amazing to think about, our working for justice as a participation in carrying the cross of Christ. It also gives me hope too, just knowing that it's through the cross that we have hope at all, that we're promised resurrection, even though we might not know how or when it will come about. Thank you so much. And thank you for this conversation. I'm grateful. And I feel like I could talk to you all day about this.
Yes. Thank you. You know, I would leave one question for any of the students who are watching and to ask this question is, you know, have you ever been asked or perhaps, conscripted to do something courageously on behalf of another?
Mm.
You know, and how did you respond? And if the answer is, well, no, I didn't respond. Well, I think it also creates an opportunity, you know, to do something different. I am reminded of St. Paul. If there's any example of someone who can pivot and do something different,
yes,
St. Paul is the perfect example. So for me, that is an indication that for any one of us, whether there are these individual moments where we need to be knocked down like Paul, or whether it's a initial life-changing experience to do that, there's always an opportunity to do so. So regardless of sometimes our weakness in humanity, the beauty is that we always have an opportunity to, make the spiritual pivot toward what God is calling me to do, what God is calling you to do. We always have those opportunities.
Yeah, every moment is one for conversion.
Amen.
Part 3, Who's That Saint? The Life of St. Peter Claver.
In 1610, Peter Claver boarded a ship to the New World, leaving behind his life in the Catalan village of Verdú, never to return. Claver was born into a devoutly Catholic and prosperous farming family in Verdú. As a student at the University of Barcelona, he was noted for his piety and intelligence. It was there where he discovered his vocation, realizing, I must dedicate myself to the service of God until death, on the understanding that I am like a slave. And he joined the Jesuits. In the New World, Claver served as a missionary and a priest in Cartagena, a rich port city in the New Kingdom of Granada, modern-day Colombia. By this time, the slave trade had existed for nearly 100 years in the Americas, and Cartagena was a major center of the trade. Thousands of slaves arrived to the port city each year, enduring a grueling crossing of the Atlantic from West Africa, under conditions so inhumane that nearly one-third of the passengers died in transit. Claver devoted himself to the service of the slaves, entering the ship's holds as soon as slave ships entered the ports to minister to the ill and exhausted passengers. As the slaves were herded out of the ships in chains to a nearby yard to be sold, Claver walked with them, offering them medicine and food. With the help of translators, Claver ministered to the slaves, assuring them of the human dignity and God's love for them. He instructed and baptized an estimated 300,000 slaves during his 40 years of ministry. Claver became a moral force in Cartagena, preaching in the city square and giving missions to sailors and traders. He died on September 8, 1654, after a four-year sickness in which he was largely inactive and neglected. Still, the city magistrates, who had questioned and frowned upon his ministry to the slaves, ordered that he should be buried at public expense and with great ceremony. Peter Claver was canonized in 1888, and Pope Leo XIII declared him the worldwide patron of missionary work among black slaves.
If you made it this far, thank you for sticking with us. This whole project is a labor of love, but we want to hear from you all. When did you first learn about Catholic social teaching? Let us know. Hit us up on social, at Kelp Campus Man on Instagram and Facebook. Share this with your friends, family, coworkers, classmates, that crazy uncle who always ruins Christmas, and a special thanks to Doris for taking the time to talk to us. You have been listening to Protagonists of Change. I'm Max Lindell, and until next time, peace out.